Maybe your garden gave you a wealth of beautiful flowers or delicious vegetables this growing season. Or maybe it gave you something even more valuable. This hour, we want to know what you're thankful for in the garden this year. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nevy. It's Horticulture Day. This hour, gratitude in the garden. And this is the time of year when people with seriously green thumbs have to turn their attention to things that can be grown indoors. Iowa State University horticulturists Richard Duran and Cindy Haynes will be here. We'll talk about potting up amaryllis bulbs and caring for houseplants through the winter months. Richard and Cindy will also answer your questions. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and the snow is coming. Even the most dedicated green thumbs have to turn their attention to growing things indoors for the next few months. And this hour, we'll talk about caring for indoor plants. Coming up in a few minutes also, Forester Mark Vitosh from the Department of Natural Resources will be here, so you can ask your tree questions today. And with me right now, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. And Cindy, I know that you also, with Thanksgiving just around the corner, also want to spend some time today finding out what people are grateful for in the garden this year. And of course, you can call and join the conversation and share what you're grateful for at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. So Cindy, you have to start. What are you grateful for in the garden this year?
Well, I was very grateful this year not to have to water as much because we had regular rains. That was really good. I'm also grateful for the things that the garden has given me. Particularly a lot of time and fun outdoors with my soon-to-be 8-year-old. So we collected 60 hedge apples last weekend, so from the woods behind our garden. So that was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun time doing that.
Very cool. What are you going to do with your hedge apples?
I have no idea, but we had to count them. We had to collect every one that we could find, and they're all sitting in my backyard. So,
this wasn't necessarily your project.
Not entirely, no. The squirrels are having a good time eating them, so I did not know that squirrels like them, but they're eating a few of them. They're nice decorations, so I can use about a dozen. So, and if anyone else needs some, just let me know.
All right. Richard, what about you? What are you grateful for this year?
The nice fall weather has been great. But I'm guessing by tomorrow morning, I may not be so thankful.
It's just a distant memory by tomorrow morning.
Yes. And we had a really nice summer in that we didn't have any widespread severe thunderstorms or anything like that. So it was a nice, nice summer.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about indoor plants right now. This, of course, is the season when all of the ornamental indoor plants start showing up at stores all over the place. If you want to buy a mini Norfolk pine that looks like a Christmas tree, that kind of thing. And amaryllis bulbs, of course, are all over the place. If that's something you'd like to do, do you have any advice for people about potting up amaryllis bulbs?
Well, the first thing would be to choose a nice large bulb because the bigger ones produce the bigger flowers. You need a pot, and the pot needs drainage holes in the bottom. So it can be ceramic, clay, plastic, whatever. I like to use clay because it's heavy. Use a commercial potting soil. And basically, when you pot it up, you want the bottom half or so of the bulb in the potting soil. And when you have that positioned correctly and the potting soil in the container, then go ahead and water it thoroughly and then put it at room temperature. And basically just keep it on the moist side, not wet, but moist. And usually within a week or two, it starts to grow. And when it does, then start to water more frequently and put it in a sunny window. And I would rotate the plant every day just so that when it starts to send up the flower stalk, it's a nice straight stalk and not kind of going toward one direction.
Right, they can tilt dramatically.
They tend to tilt, and so change that every day or so. And usually within 3 to 4 weeks, they should be in bloom.
So there's still time to have holiday blooms.
Yes, there is. But you have to buy it soon.
All right. And, you know, I love amaryllis bulbs, and I've had a great deal of success with amaryllis bulbs over the years. And last year, I learned how to fail at amaryllis bulbs. So I did learn that if you buy a couple and you forget that you have them, and then you notice them again months later, and pot them up and grow them, they will grow, but there will be no blossoms.
Right.
Right. And when you buy one, if they're in a box, kind of peek in the box to see what they look like. Because sometimes when they're in the store, they start to grow. And sometimes everything is kind of all kind of crumpled up. And so you don't want something that's already kind of in poor condition. So kind of peek in.
So particularly if you wait a while to buy amaryllis bulbs, you want to make sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. Check on the bulb inside the box. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about some other houseplants and growing things indoors this winter. Cindy, one of the things that I always notice on the show is we get a lot of phone calls from people toward the end of the growing season who would really like to move things that they don't want to lose inside.
Right.
And are there some things that we can take inside and keep throughout the winter that can still thrive?
Sure. There are a lot of things that will thrive indoors, at least for a little while. We bring in a lot of houseplants, and like amaryllis, or a lot of people put up, you know, ficus outside. Some people will also bring in their geraniums or impatiens or begonias, some of those shade-loving annuals. Some of the tuberous begonias or angel wing begonias are really popular and work really well as a houseplant indoors.
When you're bringing something in from outside, and I realize a lot of people probably have already done this, but there can be hitchhikers that come along with that. What are or some of the things you should watch out for?
You want to inspect your plants very carefully, because ideally, if you can wash them off, if there's any kind of, you know, insects that you can kind of keep them outside and just bring in the plant, that's great. You're never going to get it all. And then you can also do some, you know, washing with some soapy water, even once you're indoors. And things that are an annual, like an impatiens or begonia, they have a tendency sometimes not to last the entire winter indoors. So usually about February, they've lost a lot of light. They're starting to look a little, wimpy, excuse me. And then we just kind of, you know, decide at that time to either cut them back severely or, you know, put them on the compost pile.
Now, when you're picking places for either those plants that are in the house or if you're buying house plants and trying to set up house plants, what do you need to think about as far as light goes?
As much light as possible, usually in the winter. So most things prefer, you know, maybe some indirect light from a northern window or a little bit of direct light from an eastern window. Those things that are very colorful or more succulent, like cacti, or some of those other succulents like jade are really popular right now. Those can do really well in a western or a southern window. So having them near a window or a reliable light source is really important. And supplemental lights are great, but they usually just don't compare to, you know, having them next to the window where they might get a little sun.
All right. And you said southern or western windows. So eastern and northern windows, not so much?
Eastern and northern windows are great for things like African violet. I have, you know, some of my orchids in an eastern window and they do really well. It really depends on the plant. So, you know, read the label, find out if it likes that kind of moderate light levels, that might be an eastern window. And if it likes really high light levels, then you're looking at maybe a southern or a western window.
Now, of course, the environment inside our houses changes during the winter months, too. Is that something we need to be concerned about? Things tend to get a lot more dry, for example.
Right, because the lack of humidity becomes a real issue, especially for tropical plants. So ferns and orchids, they really like to have a higher humidity than we can usually provide indoors. And if you don't have a humidifier, some of those plants that require a higher humidity, you might put in a pebble tray, which is a large saucer with some pea gravel or decorative marbles and just a little film of water on the bottom, so that when the water evaporates, you know, off these pebbles or marbles, that it raises the humidity around the foliage of the plant. That really helps a lot of these things to perform better and to make it through the winter.
From your experience, what would you say is the most challenging thing you've grown indoors?
I always like rosemary. So I always try some of the herbs. And rosemary's tough because I can get it to make outside in a container because it likes consistent moisture. But when I bring it indoors in the winter, or when I buy one of those little rosemary Christmas trees that you can sometimes find, I always have a hard time with it. It's either too wet, too dry, or it's, a lacking humidity. So I keep trying. I still like it. But I've never been successful for more than a couple of years.
And for people who fail at growing houseplants consistently, what are some of the easiest ones to grow inside from your perspective?
Amaryllis is one that we've already talked about. Holiday cactus is another one that's pretty easy to grow and works really well. And then I like some of the foliage houseplants like snake plant or airplane plant or peace lily. They do a really good job of tolerating a wide range of conditions. And they were actually okay on some neglect. So
I have a philodendron that thrives on neglect.
There's another one. So some of these, you look for those that don't need as much water or that can tolerate slightly lower light levels. You'll find one that kind of matches your management style, I guess you could say.
All right. Well, we have a caller who has a question on exactly this topic. Jamie is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
So actually, it was about bringing in a herb garden.
Mm-hmm.
So I pulled up rosemary and thyme last night, and I was going to try to fetch. My basil kind of went to seed, but then it's growing again, so
okay.
I was going to pull up some of those seedlings to bring them in and have an inside herb garden for
sure.
Fresh herbs. So I was trying to figure out the best way to do that. And I have in the past brought an herb plant in and had the little black bugs. So I pulled them out instead of bringing that particular soil in. But what's the best thing that I can do for this to actually survive the winter and be kind of a great source of fresh herbs?
Right. There are actually a lot of herbs that do pretty well indoors. If you've got that good sunny window, like a good western window, and they do well in containers. So things that you've brought in, I would pot up into containers with some fresh soil. That little black bug might be a fungus gnat or some other, who knows, from what it is outside. So you may not have those same problems indoors at all. Plenty of light and good consistent watering, and they should be still productive throughout the winter, believe it or not. The problem with some herbs when you're growing them indoors is they taste a little different. They're not usually as strong as if you have them outside and in full sun. But fresh herbs anytime, I think, is better than dried.
And will she be able to take those plants back outside in the spring?
I hope so. Yes, she keeps them healthy. She should be able to take them right back outside in May.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
And you know that you're going to also be hit with the what are you grateful for in the garden? You,
mm-hmm.
As a forester,
can
you can broaden that a little bit. Sure.
Actually, I had a tough time in the garden. The deer kind of... got me. Just as my corn was for the first time ever, I was going to have some sweet corn, and I went out on ragbri and came back, and the corn was gone. But I hope they enjoyed it.
Right.
Actually, I was grateful for, we really had a nice growing season for trees. The tree growth was tremendous, and actually this fall, it was dry at times, but we got some timely rains. And for new tree plantings, established plantings, it really was a great growing season. And the amount of growth I saw on some trees was phenomenal.
Well, please share what you're grateful for with us. You can join the conversation with your gratitude or with your questions or both, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, Mark, before we get to the phones, I want to ask you, you know, we've had this nice, long, lovely fall. We're just about to get hit, and some areas are already getting hit with really sticky, wet snow. Is that a concern for trees at this point in the season?
Always. I mean, the good news is most trees have lost their leaves. The last couple weeks, it kind of looked like I don't know if they're going to lose them or not. But they did, and they always do. There's a few species, some of the like Norway maple and a few others I've noticed are still hanging on. That could be an issue. But if they have a tree that doesn't have any leaves, I think the opportunity for damage is going to be a lot less. And it's all timing and how that material attaches. If it gets really icy, then it doesn't matter if it has leaves or not. There could be damage. But if it's heavy snow, we might be concerned. You know, the one thing I would tell folks, if they have like newer arborvitae that are upright, some of those, they may want to get some string or some nylon, not string, and kind of tie those together or be prepared to run out and do the gentle shake and some of those things. I mean, those are things you can do if you catch it early, but you don't want to wake up tomorrow morning with a banana arborvitae with all the branches laying down and stuff. So be prepared for some of that stuff. You might have to run out and do a little shaking.
All right. And if your arborvitae is laying down or something like that, you don't want to go around and whack it with a snow shovel tomorrow morning, do you?
No.
Which can be very tempting.
And even if you go out tonight or early tomorrow morning, you don't want to hit it with a baseball bat or anything like that. You want a gentle shake. If you do things hard, you can snap things off and stuff. But be prepared for those kind of things. Or, like I said, if you've got some newer ones that are smaller, you may be able to take some nylon or rubber hose and kind of cinch them up a little tighter, help them stay up. But those are the kind of things that you got to be prepared for. But we just have to wait and see. That's the joy of the weather.
That's right. And we could possibly build some amazing snowman or snowmen tomorrow. Snow people.
Angels. All those kind of things.
All of it. All right. Let's go to the phones. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Judy's on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
I have about 25 plants that should have gotten into the ground, but didn't. So they're in my basement. And I want to know about light. We're going to try our best to salvage them because there are lots of plants.
What kind of plants are they?
Light? Okay. I have some grasses, some coral bells, some daylilies, and some other native plants. There's some. There's a butterfly bush.
Okay. Are they in pots?
Yes.
Okay. What I might maybe encourage you is to maybe bring those outside next week after the storm. It's supposed to be fairly mild next week. And see if you can't, and you may want to do this today if you can, dig a trench in the garden somewhere. And then next week, bring those plants outside and actually put them in that trench and let them overwinter basically outdoors. I think they would overwinter much better outdoors rather than indoors.
Really?
They should do fine outdoors if you put the pots in the ground. They should do fine. So I think
it should be a lot easier too, right?
Yeah, right. Basically no care at all. If you can maybe go out today and dig a trench and then maybe put those plants in that trench next week, I think they'll be fine.
And if you're worried, you can cover them up with a little bit of mulch afterwards.
Straw, right.
Or straw.
Yeah.
But they're hardy enough, they should go dormant and be fine.
Right.
Okay. How deep a trench, just like the depth of the pot?
Right. I would want the pot maybe about the very rim, top of the rim, maybe an inch above the surrounding soil, so that when it basically melts the snow, it's not going to drain into the pot. And that way they should be okay.
And they'll be easy to pop out next
right,
year, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right, or relatively easy. Judy, thanks a lot for your call. We have a note of gratitude. This one's from George. He says, I'm thankful for my neighbor who plants far more Swiss chard and kale than he can use. I like that one.
Excellent.
All right. Next up, we've got Kevin on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Kevin.
Hello. Good morning, Jerry. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, and you have some gratitude to share and a question, right?
Yes, I do. My gratitude is for me, basically, to have a sharp eye to actually see a volunteer rose bush growing in my lawn next to my ground area, next to my garden.
Oh, nice.
I was able to basically mow around it, and I've got myself a couple of arbors around it, so it looks like a vine bush or a vine rose. I'm not absolutely sure, not until I get the bloom next year to identify it. And my other question was, is it or is it not too late to plant bulbs into the ground for next year?
Well, if you can get them in the ground, you're okay, but your time that you can do that is limited, I would say, at this point. So today, before the snow, definitely you could do it. If the snow melts next week or whatever, you can do it. Basically, you can do that until the ground freezes. So, but that could happen very, very soon. So your time is limited, definitely.
All right. Maybe a lunch break would be a good idea today to run home and plant some bulbs. I mean, Cindy, I know you've talked about putting them in the ground on Thanksgiving, but
yes.
Of course, if you can't get to the ground.
You can't get to the ground, it's pretty impossible to plant those bulbs. You can also think of forcing a few of them.
Right. I've done it as late as early December, so mm-hmm. The weather has to cooperate, though.
All right. Well, Kevin, thanks a lot for your call, and good luck with that. Let's go to Lee in Des Moines. Hi, Lee.
Yes. Well, I'm thankful to have found the seeds of two native shrubs, bladdernut and eastern wahoo.
Nice.
And that leads to my question. How do I prepare those for planting, and can I attempt to grow them indoors over the winter for transplant next year?
Well, most of your woody plant species, like your trees and shrubs, the seeds need to be exposed to moist, cool conditions before they can germinate. So what I would be inclined to do is go ahead and pot those up in potting soil and probably plant them maybe like a quarter inch, half inch deep. And then I would place them in a plastic bag and then place them in the refrigerator. And I would leave them there for basically 3 to 4 months. And then you can take them out in the spring, place the plants at room temperature, and hopefully within a few weeks, the seeds germinate. And when they do so, you can bring them outside in the spring and eventually plant them.
Okay. Do you happen to know if these seeds require any scoring?
I don't think the wahoo would. But the other one might. I'm not sure on that one.
If you go online, Lee, and Google Woody Seed Manual, USDA, it actually has most of the U.S. native plants in there. And it's online, and you can go by genus, species, and you can find any of those requirements in that manual.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thanks a lot for the information.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Lee. 866-780-9100 is the number to call to join our conversation. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh, Richard Geron of Iowa State University Extension, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Next up, we've got Natalie in Iowa City. Hi, Natalie.
Hi. I had a question about I have a two-pot a black currant that I bought this spring, and I never planted it. And I also have a strawberry, just a one, pot of strawberry. And I don't know what to do with it, whether to take it in, put it on the ground. You know, it's kind of a similar question to everybody else, but, to put it in the fridge or just plant it as soon as possible right away before the snow hits.
Well, the currants are growing in a...
Where?
Yeah, the currants are growing in a pot.
The question is where?
Okay. The currants are growing in a pot.
Oh, I'm sorry. Natalie, are the currants are in a pot? Natalie, did we lose you?
Well, I'm assuming that
yes,
they are.
No, I'm here.
Okay.
Okay, if they're in a pot, again, I would go out immediately, dig a hole, set the pots in the ground. The strawberries, are they in like a strawberry type container, or where they have various holes?
Just a plastic container.
Yeah, just a, yes.
Okay. Again, I'd probably just dig a hole and put the pot in the ground too on those also.
Okay.
They're actually pretty hardy plants.
All right. Good luck with that, Natalie. I hope you get home in time to dig a hole before the snow comes. All right. Next, we will go to Don in Rock Island. Hi, Don.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, this is actually unexpected gratitude that came from the loss of two mature white oaks in our neighborhood in Rock Island. First one, we lost a 176-year-old oak in the neighbor's yard. Wow. The unexpected gratitude came was I was finally able to put in a decent tomato garden for my 91-year-old mother-in-law,
okay,
who was crazy about Nebraska wedding tomatoes. And the second tree we lost in the neighborhood led to something extremely interesting. The power company was there cutting it down because it was interfering with the power line, and they had to stop unexpectedly. As the tree was growing decades earlier, it had swallowed up and encapsulated about 6 or 7 paving bricks, because the street used to be paved with brick at the time. And when they snapped about 4 blades, they finally discovered what was inside the trunk of the tree about 40 feet up.
Wow, that's fascinating.
I never knew that that was possible. So I looked it up online, and there's a tree out in Washington State that's actually swallowed a bicycle, and you can see it online. It's the bicycle's about 20 feet in the air, completely encapsulated by the tree. So I guess my question to the arborist would be, have you heard of that before, older growth trees swallowing up items as they grow?
Yes. I mean, that can happen a lot. I've actually seen signs. There's actually a plow in Exira, Iowa, called the Plow Oak.
Correct.
The story goes that a young man went south to go to battle and laid his plow next to that tree, and that tree has grown over it, and there's portions still exposed. So the thing is, you go out in pastures and fields and stuff, and you'll find wire right down the middle of trees. That basically, the cambium layer starts growing, and if something impedes it, it tries to grow around it. And so, yes, that can happen fairly easily over time.
Don, thank you so much for your call. I can imagine people doing that on purpose to have something interesting in their tree. Have you ever seen that, Mark?
No, I can't, but don't give them any ideas.
It's the new hipster trend. I just started it.
I tied my bike to the tree.
Right.
30 years later.
All right, we've got another tree question for you. This one from Vicki in Iowa City. Hi, Vicki.
Hello there.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is about planting oak trees. It's actually on a property that's away from our home, so we can't watch it closely. We planted 4 oak trees, and they were so severely damaged by bark being stripped that 2 of them died. Then we replaced them with 2 maples, and those 2 maples now this season have also been severely stripped, their bark. And my husband and I are having the debate about whether it's raccoon or deer that are doing this serious damage to our trees.
Well, Vicki, it's most likely deer this time of year. The bucks are rubbing significantly. I see it all the time in the woods and people's yards. And if it's in that first couple feet along the trunk, it doesn't matter what side, that bark will be just stripped all the way up and down. That's usually the bucks rubbing. The best way to prevent that is a couple different things. Depending on the size of tree, if that stem is fairly clear on the tree, you can use some type of tube or tree wrap, or even sometimes people will take snow fence and make a tube out of that and take twist ties and not get it too tight, but put that around the trunk. Sometimes you want it, you don't want it really loose, because if it is bucks, they'll actually put their antlers in there and try to rip it off and do other things. Or if you want to get really severe and really protect that tree, is get a couple T-posts and get hard wire and make a cage for a number of years around those trees to kind of protect them. You know, that's something that you're always going to deal with. The other thing is, as time goes in the winter, if we have snow, rabbits and others, if the trunks are smaller, rabbits and mice will eat the bark as it goes, basically as the snow drops in the wintertime. So that's where some type of tube or cage that can minimize even some of those other critters can be very beneficial. Usually once the diameter of that trunk gets, 4 to 5 inches, the bucks won't tend to take on those trees. But so in the first couple years is when it's most critical to protect them.
And if she has it scraped off on one side, is that going to hurt the tree in the long term?
Yeah, that's an entry area for decay and stuff. What happens a lot of times, depending on the species, it will try to close or seal that wound shut. But depending on how quickly it can, a lot of times you'll get decay and stuff, and then you come back in 5 years as that tree gets bigger and you get a windstorm and it snaps off at that point. If it's one of those deals, though, if it's out in the country, I would plant a couple others, leave those, see how they do, continue to protect them, and make sure you put distance in between them, because if it does seal and it does seal correctly, that tree could survive. It just depends on the amount of circumference that's damaged by that buck.
All right. And clearly, if you have damage all the way around,
I think it's over. Yep.
All right.
It's time to start over.
All right. Vicki, thank you so much for your call. You can join our conversation with your questions. And we're also talking about what we're grateful for in the garden this year. So you can call and share something you're grateful for or ask a question or both. Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Dale is on the line next in Dubuque. Hi, Dale.
Yes.
Hi, what's your question?
Yeah, I have a question. I grew peppers down this year, and they weren't, too productive. I didn't get many on it, and I was just wondering if I could do something extra to make them, be productive.
Well, peppers need a well-drained soil and full sun. The other thing they need are moderate temperatures, because they're very finicky in regards to temperatures. If it's too hot or too cold, they will not set fruit. They will flower but not set fruit. So, and obviously you can't do anything about that, but so when we have, for example, very cool evenings during the summer or very hot days, then those flowers simply do not set. They simply fall off. So hopefully you'll have better luck next year.
Okay. Is there anything like putting peppers matches to the soil to make them grow better?
No, they don't have any special needs. They don't have any special needs.
Okay.
If it's a well-drained soil, a fertile soil. Now, one thing is, do not over-fertilize. If you put on too much nitrogen, that will encourage leafy vegetative growth, but actually discourage flowering and fruit set. So don't over-fertilize.
That could be what I did wrong. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Colette in Coralville. Hi, Colette.
Yes, hello. I have 25 acres in western Iowa that is on a steep slope planted currently in smooth brome grass. We want to plant it in prairie grasses and forbs to stabilize the slope, because we're worried about soil erosion on the slope. I'm wondering, what should I plant and how should I plant it into the brome to eventually replace the brome grass with the prairie grasses and forbs? Can that be done? How do we do it? What should we plant?
Well, I think one way of doing that would be to basically spray the area with Roundup. And that would hopefully destroy the grass. And then you can leave that debris there. and then maybe seed into it. A very good time to do that would be like in the fall of the year. We had a large area at a research farm here in Ames that basically was converted into prairie. And they went out basically in midsummer. They sprayed the entire area with Roundup, and then they came back and seeded in October. So it'll be one way of doing it. And as far as a seed mix, you typically want grasses and your wildflowers. And I guess I would check locally, maybe with your county conservation board, to see if they know of any local seed sources in your area. Typically there are some, and maybe get seed there.
I would also check. I would also check with your local Natural Resource Conservation Service because they also often have cost share programs through the local offices that may be able to assist you. And sometimes there's even local people there that they can tie you into that maybe have a no-till drill if you're going to be looking at that process and those kind of things.
Okay, that was what I was wondering. Is it possible to use a no-till drill and drill directly into the brome? Is that an option?
It depends on your slopes and stuff like that, but you would still want to kill it, like Richard said, but it is possible. But I would work with them locally to see who has equipment and see if you're looking, you know, even if you're not looking for cost share, they can help develop a plan, seed mix, and those kind of things for you locally. There's a lot of work being done in the Lus Hills area. There's a lot of people doing it out there, so there's a lot of great local resources that can help you.
Okay. I thank you for your answer.
All right, Colette. Bye-bye. Thanks. Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Terry is on the line next from Aledo. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Thank you for having the program. I enjoy it. As I drive around the country, I see these little oak trees that, maybe a foot and a half tall, and they have such beautiful color. Would those grow up to have the same kind of color, or does that kind of fade as they get older?
Depending on species, usually that color, doesn't change over time. As they get older, it doesn't get richer. So usually whatever color they have as a younger tree, they're usually going to have that similar color as they mature. So the key is to find out what species you're seeing depending on what part of the country you're looking at.
Okay. If I would dig up those small trees, like I say, they're real small, and transplant them probably next spring, would that... then I would probably have a nice oak tree in 40 years.
Yeah, but in general, as we do with all plants, we tend not to encourage moving things from other states and stuff, depending what species they are, what their seed source or their hardiness is and those kind of things. Or you worry about potential diseases and insects that might be transferred in that soil and those kind of things. And the other thing is... if it's on private property of someone you know, yes. If it's not on private property or someone you don't know, you would definitely not want to do that. But my biggest concern would be moving something and maybe transferring something back here that we really don't want. I think the key would be to find out what species it is and see if there's local sources in the Midwest where you could get that source.
Well, and if she's seeing these little saplings, what about picking up acorns from the big tree that
they're near?
She
could definitely do that. She could get acorns. That's a great idea in the fall. But just, again, trying to find out what species it is to make sure that it's a species adaptable specifically to this area.
All right, Terry, thanks a lot for your call. Carol is on the line next in Bettendorf. Hi, Carol.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a geranium question. In the past, I've overwintered them by putting them bare-rooted in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
But this fall, I repotted the two larger ones because they were so prolific. I cut them back slightly and cut all the blooms off, of course, and some of the green. They're in the window now. They're in a very sunny window, and they're just blooming immensely. I don't know what to do with them now because some of the leaves have started to turn yellow, and I try to trim those back occasionally, but it won't stop blooming, and I haven't even fertilized them.
Okay.
So I guess my question is, what do I do now?
Sounds like you're something to be thankful for.
I would enjoy the flowers. I would enjoy the flowers. What I would tend to do is water them fairly infrequently, not as often mm-hmm. as you would outdoors, maybe once mm-hmm. or twice a month, to basically kind of discourage a lot of growth, just to kind of get them to overwinter. And let them bloom. Remove the spent flowers when they're done blooming. Remove the yellow mm-hmm. leaves, and they should be fine. I would probably cut those back pretty severely in early March, because by then they'll be pretty tall and lanky, and you want to have a nice plant to set outside in the spring. So I would probably cut them back quite a bit in early March.
All right, Carol, thanks a lot for your call. And let's do a couple of emails here. Here's a nice gratitude email. This is from Joanne. I'm extremely thankful for more than 11 tons of produce harvested
wow.
from the Agape Garden in Ankeny and all the volunteers who invested time and energy and expertise to nurture it. Everything was distributed through food pantries in the metro area to feed hungry people.
Good job.
That's very nice. This is a question from Julie. I'm wondering if I can dig up some of the Gerber daisies I have growing in my front yard and keep them alive inside my house.
Yeah, this is going to be a little tough. You can, and you can try, and they'll do okay for a little bit. It's really hard to give them enough light and the right conditions so that they perform well for you throughout the winter. My guess is treat it like an annual. It was a nice thing to have outside, and let's buy a new one next year.
All right. Here's a question from John. I purchased a sequoia tree in California a year and a Ooh. Half ago, and I've had it outside during the summer, and I've brought it inside. Last winter, I just brought it back in. I'd like to plant it in the ground permanently next spring. It was 8 inches when purchased. It's now 3 feet tall. I plan to put it in a county park. Anything special I would need to do? Mark?
Yeah.
Take it back to California, to be honest.
Oh.
I think it's going to struggle.
Yeah.
I think our summer is going to hurt it. I think the thing I would do is mulch and do really good weed control. I apologize. Don't really take it back to California. But I would mulch it, give it good moisture, and try to give it as much care as you can there. But I think I've seen that people try that, and I think our summers are going to be a significant challenge.
All right. So it's the summers, not the winters? Or both?
I think it's going to be a little bit of both, definitely. Right. But I think our temperatures and our heat is going to be a struggle for it.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Dick is on the line in Letts. Hello, Dick.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Oh, good morning. Hello.
Yep. We're hearing you. Go on.
I'd like to thank an FFA instructor that took over a project for their FFA group and planted our little acreage with Christmas trees in the early 90s. And now that I'm getting older and can't take care of it really well, they've accepted our proposition to take over the operation and sell off the remaining trees, and I'm thankful for that.
Nice.
They did a good job. And they're a great bunch of kids.
That's great, Dick.
I do have a question. I have some hydrangea plants that I got, and the instructions on those say something about partial shade. I'm wondering what partial shade is.
Partial shade is usually something that only gets a part of the day of sun. So partial shade might be an eastern exposure that gets just a little bit of morning light. Or partial shade could be, a strong western exposure that only gets you maybe some late afternoon sun.
Okay.
Usually it's about around 4 hours. 4 hours of light. Mm-hmm.
What would that do in full sun?
The hydrangeas in full sun will actually do okay. They have a tendency to wilt, and they need extra water if they're in full sun. So if you could, the biggest wilting will probably happen in midday. So if they could have some sort of shade from another tree or from a building, especially at midday, they'll probably perform better for you. Otherwise, you're just going to have to water it a little bit more to kind of keep it thriving.
Just to keep it from wilting.
Right. And some of that will be from heat more so than just a lack of water. So they perform better if they can have that midday shade.
Okay. So I really don't have a really good place to plant these in partial shade, but I was thinking about putting them out in the full sun. But if I do take care of those out there, they'd be okay, though.
They will probably survive just fine.
Okay.
Just keep the water hose nearby.
All right,
Dick. Yep, thanks a lot for your call. Here's a question from Jason in Iowa City. We were talking about killing all of those acres of grass. He wants to know if there are any organic ways to kill grasses.
Well, basically you have the option of cultivation. It may take more than one attempt to do that. But when it's a large area, your options are fairly limited. It's usually cultivation or using something like Roundup. Now, in a small area, you could use like a tarp or something of that nature and simply cover the area for maybe 2 or 3 months. But large areas, basically herbicides or cultivation.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Bonnie is on the line in Wellman. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. I wanted to ask a question concerning a fig tree or a fig bush. Is there a difference between those? Because I transferred one from my father's fig tree, which was from Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
And I have it in a sunny location. 1 year it grew about 7 feet high, and it had figs on it, but they never quite ripened.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I don't know if it was cold here, it didn't grow very soon in the spring. It got a late start, like, and then it maybe got 4 feet high. I don't mm-hmm. know whether to prune it back or not.
Yeah, the true edible fig, so not the ficus or houseplant, we're talking about the true edible fig, is a shrub, and it can get quite large. Most of Iowa is very marginal for this one. It will do well in parts of Missouri and certainly into Arkansas, but it's a plant that needs to get a certain size, and then it blooms and fruits off of the previous season's wood. So cutting it back would not encourage a lot of new growth and flowering and fruiting. So this is a hard one. So I've, being from the South, this is one I have tried to grow before, and it usually entails, you know, planting it in a really protected location or in a large container, and then doing some kind of heroic efforts to try and overwinter it, which might mean, you know, caging it and burying it in compost and soil and straw. And I'm not sure the figs are worth it. So
sounds like you don't still have a fig tree.
I do have one in a container, and I bring it inside in my sunroom because it will tolerate some freezing temperatures. It just won't tolerate really low temperatures. And I think in the 3 years I've had it, I've gotten maybe 2 figs.
All right. Bonnie, thanks a lot for your call. Good mm-hmm. luck with that. And a final question from Leanne in Cedar Rapids. Quickly, Leanne.
Hi. I'm trying to grow lettuce indoors, and I'm wondering if that's possible over winter, if I should keep it in a sunny location or a darker location. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you can start lettuce indoors. You can start a lot of microgreens indoors. Make sure you sow the seeds heavy, and I would sow them in like a window box or a flat-type container, put it in a sunny window, and then just harvest it from that. And you can repeatedly sow seeds and grow and harvest the lettuce, usually about a month after sowing. So it's a nice way to do it. So just a lot of sun or under some supplemental lights like fluorescent lights to keep it growing.
All right. Leanne, thanks a lot for your call. Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thank you.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron was with Iowa State University Extension. And Mark Vitosh, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure.
DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. We'll be back with Horticulture Day not next week, but the week after Thanksgiving, and I hope everyone has a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.